You're listening to Alden and Rowdy, episode 394. Alternate Reality is a podcast about comics, comic-related media, and comic-related merchandise. We do reviews of all sorts, TV, video games, movies, and comic issues. So be warned, the following show material contains spoilers. If you have not read your books, seen the movies, played the games, so forth and so on, then you may want to stop the show until you have done so, or you can proceed at your own caution. You have been warned. Hello and welcome to Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. My name is John.
And my name is Charlie.
You're making fun of me, aren't you? We're here each and every week to talk to you about all
the... No game show, I'm not.
Hey, we're here each and every week to talk to you about all the things in comic books. And we know you're going to be super excited about that when you see what's behind door number two. No. Anyway, we're here to talk about comics. This is the comic book podcast. We like to think we got a good thing going here where we talk about the books that came out this past week or so, what we've read, what we liked, what we thought of it, what was stupid, what was bad, what was great, so forth.
I'm not going to talk about stupid stuff.
You get the gist of that. Well, occasionally I feel like something needs to be pointed out as, boy, this was horrible.
I might say something you're reading is stupid, but yeah, nothing I read.
Nothing you read is stupid, because you wouldn't even pick it up if it was bad, right?
That's why I'm not picking up Die, 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 number one by Robert Kirkman and Chris Burnham.
So, yes, because we've heard bad things. Very, very, very bad things. So, but we got, you know, just, we got a bunch of good stuff to talk about this week. Although it is a slightly lighter week because I got roadblocked in my comic book reading.
You want to explain why?
Well, because, like, Charlie posted on Twitter on, like, Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday. Oh, my God, this is a must-talk-about book for Alden and Rowdy this week. This is great. And it's a picture of Flash number 50. And I knew that Flash War was coming to a head, and it was the last issue of that. And I was like, well, that's great. I'm going to have to catch up on that. Now, I understand that I'm under no obligation to read this. But I kind of wanted to read it. And now that I knew Charlie was going to be talking about it, and it was supposedly really good, and because it has implications to the greater story arc of Rebirth and what's going on in the universe.
Why? Because I lent you like 12 issues of it?
Yes. I said, you know what? Geez, I don't have any choice. I better get caught up. Just, if not on the whole thing, on this Flash War stuff, right? I still didn't go back and read the stuff Charlie gave me yet. And I'm a busy man. I hope to get to it at some point.
Okay.
But,
cut it out.
Anyway, so I read, the first day I started reading this week, I read a couple issues. I read Superman, I read Amazing Spider-Man, I read Flash Annual. And then the next day, I read all four parts of the Flash War. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, all right, that's a good first couple of days of reading. Now I've got the weekend to plow through the rest of my books. My weekend was just hectic crazy. I was helping some guy move. I was helping, you know, I was dog sitting one day.
Were helping someone move.
Yes.
Who?
Bruce.
Bruce moved?
Yes, he bought a house.
Huh. Good for him.
And so he calls me and goes, I need help moving. I don't have any help. I'm doing this all by myself. I understand that. I've been there. In fact, I was moving once before, and Charlie was the only one who would come help me. And so it's...
Well, it was different. You moved from trailer to trailer.
Yeah, it was like across the road. Well, most of all of Bruce's stuff was in the neighborhood because he had moved it to storage, you know, months ago. He just had a couple minute things to move from house to house.
Not that many people know this, but Bruce is a divorced man.
No, he's not. He's married with two kids. Well, a grown
miserly
kid.
Old man who...
He's not. He's
hates people.
He's a young, vigorous, healthy, bald, gorgeous-looking man.
Bald. Why do you have to say that for you?
Well, because it's like the Rock bald, not like old person bald. He didn't lose his hair. He just shaves his head. He embraces it. He goes with it. But anyway, it's not the point. We're not here to talk about Bruce. But because
you're not.
because I got tied up doing things over the weekend, I didn't get any more issues read. So I got Superman, I got Amazing Spider-Man, and I got like 5 issues of The Flash read, and that's all the reading I got done. So Charlie's going to have to help me out this week and try to...
I only read 5 books.
I think... You wrote 7. Well, I read more than you, but part of mine was catch-up. Not catch-up, but catching up. And so, there you go. And so, I didn't have another book to talk about, which makes this one list short in the list this week. So enjoy this abbreviated version of Alden and Reality tonight as we get into it. But Charlie thinks we've got plenty to talk about.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So let's get directly into this week's comic book reviews. We'll be back in just a moment.
One shall stand, one shall fall. Why throw away your life so recklessly? That's a question you should ask yourself, Megatron.
Alden and Reality, the comic book podcast. Check us out on the internet at arnetcast.podomatic.com, where you can catch this episode as well as a bunch of other episodes we've hosted previously, going all the way back to our Avengers Infinity review in May. So there's a lot of good material there. Don't miss out on a single
episode. It'll be out on DVD. Yes, digital on 7/31.
Charlie was remarking earlier, wow, that's out fast, didn't it? Coming to video on DVD really fast.
Well, the DVD and Blu-ray won't be out till like the middle of next month, but the digital at the end of this month.
Coming pretty quick. So, but my point is, there's several good...
Didn't I just watch that crap?
This horrible comic book movie. If you want to know just how horrible, go back to listen to Alden and Reality, Infinity War movie review.
Someone I know, he's a kind of a geek person, like big in the game.
Yeah, because we don't know any of those kinds of people.
Said he spent 120
big hours. In the game?
120 hours of his life.
Like, being a geek is like being a Wall Street investor or something like that. Anyway, go ahead.
He spent over 120 hours watching that movie.
120 hours? How many times is that?
Like 58.
Well, okay. Yeah, I guess they're about 2 hours long. Okay, so. Jeez. It's yeah. Not that good.
I was like, I could barely sit through the first.
It's not that good. Wow. All right.
Well, his favorite character is...
Thanos?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, yeah, then there... I could see that's a wet dream come true if that's the case. All right.
Because he said it was really weird watching the movie with his mom.
Come on, Mom. Thanos is awesome.
And his mom just realizing that his favorite comic book character is the bad guy.
Yeah, his mom being disappointed that this is what he does with his life. You know, he's big in the game. He could have went to business school, but no, he's big in the game of geekery. All right. There's my overall point.
Well, he affords many a hot toys that I would never be able to buy.
That's fine. Perhaps he does well. Anyway, the point I was trying to make is if you go to our website, there's a bunch of really cool episodes there, and you can stay up on everything that we're doing at the Alden and Reality podcast. All right. Misspoke. Sorry. Keep in mind that this is a spoiler podcast, so the books we talk about, we're going to talk about the plot points and the things going on in the books. And so if you don't want spoiled on these books tonight, then you should stop the show until you had a chance to read them. So first up on our list is Superman number 1, the first regular issue of Superman out from Brian Michael Bendis. Will be writing both Superman and Bendis will be writing Hey, Befabba Aber.
I was going to say, you're starting to sound like Mushmouth there.
Bendis will be writing 2 Superman stories going forward, both in Superman and in Action Comics. As I understand, the plan for those is for Superman to be a much more grand story about going to the farthest reaches of the universe and fighting the biggest bad guys. And the story in Action Comics will be much more low-key, like Clark Kent, day-to-day life, you know, doing things around Metropolis, rescuing cats out of trees, and the relationships that he has with people in his life. You know, Jimmy, Perry White.
So in other words, the Superman title will be the action title.
Yeah, they flipped.
And the action will be the...
The Superman title.
No, the thing he does in every other book is talking head issues.
Right. Well, so, but prior to Bendis coming on, the idea flipped because Action Comics was the big universe-spanning stories.
Yeah.
Dan Jurgens was writing, and Peter Tomasi over on Superman was writing Superman family stuff. Yeah. So Bendis just flipped
it. Which were really good.
Yeah, which is weird. All right, so let me just get this out of the way. The best thing about this book is Yvonne Hayes on artwork. It is gorgeous. I mean, it is absolutely amazingly gorgeous. The panel layouts, the shading and the dynamic poses that these characters find themselves in is just fantastic. I love every bit of it. So
yeah, he's always been good.
Yeah, and you know, I read in an interview recently that Bendis was talking about when he got together with Yvonne, talking about what Yvonne wanted to do, and he said, "You're really known for big stories like, you know, Blackest Day, Blackest Night, and all that stuff, and the Green Lantern Corps War and stuff, and those huge stories." And he said,
"We won't be doing none of that here."
He said, "But you've really not laid down a long run on a single title." He said, "Are you interested in doing that?" And he said, and Yvonne said, "Yes." But he said, "But at the same time, I want to touch that pulse of what you were doing in Green Lantern by doing the big universe-spanning story, but just do it in this book." And Yvonne was all on board for that. So you're going to get that level of amazingness from Yvonne Hayes in this book. So that should be good.
Yvonne can't do a monthly book.
Well, that's fine. Even if it's delayed, I don't care. It's so gorgeous, it's worth it.
No, I'm saying the quality will dip.
Oh, you think so? Yeah, I hope not.
It'd be like Jim Lee.
Well, no. All right, so story-wise, this book basically is Superman being upset. He's looking for his family because if you remember at the end of the Man of Steel miniseries, he had broken the communicator. He had to get in touch with Lois and his dad and John. And so he don't know. And so he's just roaming the galaxy, hoping to run into him and feeling like it's pointless. When he stumbles upon the Dominators, and the Dominators have got an armada amassed heading for Earth. And Superman's like, "Well, it's a good thing I ran into you. Welcome to town, Tonto," and just destroys them.
Yeah, I was like, "Wow, that's lucky."
Yeah, so that was good. But he spends a lot of the episode remembering, like I said, this lonely man thing that we talked about last time. He spends a lot of the episode, a lot of the issue, excuse me, just thinking about the fact that Lois is not there and John's not there and remembering what it's like and feeling very alone without them. This will ultimately lead to his infidelity, probably. We hope it doesn't go there, but it definitely seems to be headed in that direction.
You hope.
Here we see the scene shifts quickly to the Justice League trying to help him recover what they can from the wrecked Fortress of Solitude. Superman pulls the key crystal, what I call the key crystal, out of the ground, which is the crystal that built the fortress.
Oh, and, the green crystal?
Well, it's not green in this. It's like a purplish color. But anyway, it's the key crystal, the first one. And he pulls it out of the ground and he says, "Well, we're time to let bygones be bygones and build something new." He goes to the Bermuda Triangle and throws the crystal into the water and builds a new Fortress of Solitude up out of the water in the Bermuda Triangle. Stupidest idea ever, Bendis. Okay.
That's almost as bad as Superman's Amazon.
The Tesseract Fortress. The Tesseract Fortress that he had in the Amazon. That was dumb.
Not the Tesseract, but you know.
Oh, the Tesseract was cool, but putting it in the Amazon was stupid. Everybody knows the Fortress of Solitude's at the North Pole. They don't even try to hide it. They know it's there. All the villains knows it's there. Yeah, everybody knows where it is.
Because they've had several issues where he's had been broken into.
So
maybe that's why he's doing it. Nobody knows now.
Well, I guess he figures if it's in the Bermuda Triangle, either they won't be able to find it or they'll get lost on the way to it and never show up again. I don't know. Here you see...
How many planes have been lost in that since, like, the mid-90s?
None, yeah.
Either we're not flying in that general area now...
Or technology has gotten to the place where it's not hard to navigate the Bermuda Triangle anymore.
Or that whole dimensional porthole thing just does not exist anymore.
Well, you know, who knows? The doctor may have shut that dimensional wormhole down. Who knows? So we get some scenes with Clark Kent, and he's being a reporter, and that kind of is, you know, just filler.
He's a reporter?
Yeah, that happens from time to time. And
I thought Bendis was doing something new.
Well, here's something new. So this is what I get, what I think is the most controversial, weird scene in the whole book, is this idea that Martian Manhunter is hovering above Metropolis, and he calls out Superman to come meet him, right? Superman flies up. Hey, Superman, I want to talk to you. Superman flies up and talks to Martian Manhunter, and he says, "Hey, you know, people have always kind of joked that me and you were a lot alike because we were the last survivors of our race. But I never really felt like that was the case.
Someone beat you down right here.
Martian Manhunter says, I never really felt like that was the case because, you know, you were the survivor of an accident and I was a survivor of a genocide. He said, well, I always felt like they were vastly different things. And not that mine more tragic than yours, just different. He said, but if what you're telling us is true, that Krypton was destroyed on purpose by somebody, then that makes us the same. And I feel like we're more brothers now. Then they start talking about the Earth.
Brothers.
And so Superman's like, I appreciate that. That means a lot to me, John. And they start talking about the Earth and how the Earth is in disarray. We need leadership. And Martian Manhunter starts urging Superman to take control of the Earth and lead it into a bright new destiny. He starts...
Wait a second. Has Martian Manhunter become his father all of a sudden?
I don't know. But he starts urging him, like Superman, here we are in the 20th century.
Superman, only you can be that light. he starts talking in light.
They only like the light to show the way.
He starts talking like...
Marlon Brando. he got that lipstick at the bottom. Anyway...
you can be that light.
But anyway, he starts telling him, like, here we are, it's the 21st century. He goes, and we still have squabbling over oil rights and petty wars. And things of this nature. He said, there's a brighter way.
Newspaper.
He said, you and me both come from advanced civilizations, and it's time for Earth to take its place in the interstellar neighborhood. He said, but we are too divided. We need somebody to lead us into a bright future. Who other than you could do it? And Superman's like, that's not my position. I'm not a leader. I just help out when I'm needed. You know, the classic Superman line. We're all on the same team, at Warden, you know, all that. And he was like, no, Superman, you could easily take control of the whole Earth. I was like, Martian Manhunter, where's this coming from? This is like Lex Luthor is taking him over. Well, Superman's like, all right, well, I'll think about it. I got to go. And leaves. And Martian Manhunter's like, well, I probably pushed too hard. You reckon? So, anyway, at that point, he flies off. And the last thing that happens in the book is that the scene dramatically shifts. And suddenly Superman realizes that the entire Earth has changed, and he doesn't at first know what it is, only to realize that the entire Earth, as he spans out into the void, is actually in the Phantom Zone.
And so, he would notice that, you know, joining powers. And
right. So Rogar Zal just got condemned to the Phantom Zone at the end of the Man of Steel miniseries. Now suddenly Superman and all the Earth and all its inhabitants are all in the Phantom Zone. How did that happen? I don't know. Like I said, this whole issue...
Got kicked in the head.
Eyes go crossed, falls down a well, they go back straight. I don't know. My stupid chair. Anyway, but this issue was really good for the most part. Yvonne Hayes' artwork, as I said, fantastic. The story beats are interesting. But Martian Manhunter was way out of character in this issue. It was weird. All right, Charlie. That brings us to Flash number...
I understand.
What?
What happened in the beginning of the book?
In the beginning of this book?
Of Superman, yes.
Of this issue, you mean?
Yes. What's going on?
He's looking for his family out in outer space.
And who's he meet?
He meets the Dominators.
Uh-huh.
So you think they've got him in some kind of mind prison or something? Or
no, I wonder if they're pretending to be John.
Oh. Do they have the ability to do that? They're not shape changers that I'm aware of.
They are on the TV series.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that about them. So if that's the case, I didn't know it.
Interesting.
All right, Charlie.
I don't know why he would have a thing where we're going, maybe I pushed too hard. Well, the Dominators in the TV show, I think they can't. I don't remember.
Yeah, it's weird. Anyway, overall, it was an enjoyable issue. I liked it a lot. But that one scene, like I said, was way out of character for Martian Manhunter. Unless, like I said, he's been replaced or being mind controlled or something. I don't know. All right. That brings us to the next book, Flash number 50. Charlie, this is a big deal.
So you've been reading earlier issues?
But I read The Flash War. I haven't read earlier than that.
Yes, so you're...
Yeah, yeah.
Seeing as this concludes that storyline.
I've read this and the issues immediately previous to it, yes.
So what have you been thinking so far?
I thought Wally was acting like really weird through the whole thing. That was the thing I kept walking away with. Like, why is Wally acting like... This is not the Wally I remember as the Flash. He's just weird now. It's like he's doing rash, impulsive things that are not what a tempered, mature hero who used to be the JLA Flash would do. He acts more like Kid Flash than he does the Flash.
Well, you got to remember before this, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was trapped in the miasma of the Speed Force for 5 years.
Right.
So when he comes back to Earth, he has no memory, basically. Right.
Right.
So everything that he has memory of Barry. He has memory of Iris.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, of all the people in his life, but and not his true self.
Mm-hmm.
So when Zoom shows him what he shows him and says, you know, Barry knows about all this. He could help you
get right. all if this Barry back wanted
if
to.
He wanted to.
Yeah, he's holding out on you.
And he... Once he's introduced to, like, his kids and stuff, he realizes that, yes, he was a father, and he had children, a wife, and he wants all that back. I mean, you know, theoretically, what would happen if someone kidnapped your kids?
Right.
Would you act
differently? Well, I might, but it would depend. In his situation, you're talking about what he set out to do, if we can proceed to that. What he set out to do is to break the Speed Force. In an attempt to free his children from the Speed Force.
Yeah.
And all Barry is saying is, wait, let's talk it out. Nothing's going to be hurt by waiting 10 more minutes until me and you think about this.
Yeah.
But Wally won't. He's so rash and so impulsive and so determined that he won't stop for a second to listen to anything Barry's got to say. Because he's convinced that Barry's selfish and Barry doesn't want to help him.
Yeah.
Which, like I said, doesn't feel like Wally West to me.
Well, this issue...
Because in my opinion, Wally West was a greater Flash than Barry Allen.
Oh, I still think he is.
Yeah,
still.
So and he's not acting like it now. Unless he's just missing so much of himself that he's not acting like himself.
That's what I'm saying. He was lost in the Speed Force, so who knows what...
And what kind of Swiss cheese...
Because since he's come back, he's come back with his weakened heart again. So, like, that's happened. He almost died, like, at least 4 times since he's been back.
Oh, okay.
So, he's went to... Deathstroke stole his power, I think, in an issue. They did a Judas contract where Deathstroke stole his powers. Like I said, he's almost died, like, 3 or 4 times. He's... tried to rekindle his relationship with Linda.
Mm-hmm. She doesn't remember him.
Yeah, and she has no clue. I mean, he tried to date her, but she's like, this is weird because you...
Act like you know me.
Yeah, you act like you know me, and then we've had all these memories, and that's not me. Yeah. So like I said, basically his life's in ruins and tatters almost, and...
He went and found another girl that he used to date and turned her into a bad guy again.
But, Zoom has, like, taken, like, control of, like, the Flash costume in this, and I think it's kind of cool because, like, when they said Flash War, it's like, I don't know if Barry and Wally would really go out that much with each other. You know, they might get, like, to a point where they're in a pushing match, like a father-son thing.
Right.
Or, like... Wally might throw a punch, but, like, I was like, I don't think they'd really be in a war, you know, or to change something. But no, it's Zoom. He takes over, like, a Flash costume.
Right.
Which I think is cool because it's just like, okay, now it's a Flash war because you got, like, 3 or 4 Flashes.
Right.
And, the weird thing is, like, They reintroduce Hypertime in this.
Yes.
For like a minute or two.
Now, Hypertime keeps showing up.
Yeah, it does. This is like the second or third time.
It's been mentioned in the last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I like the dialogue between Barry and Wally in this. Like, to where, like, Barry's, like, trying to talk to Wally, and it's like, you know, we could really, like I said, they're having this tension where, like, they're fighting Zoom, who actually does, like, break the Sage and the, I can't remember the other name of the force.
Yeah, the Sage Force and the Strength Force. It's got to do with strength.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, you read, like, the issue before this, right?
Yes.
And that's the thing that they were talking about in JLA number 2, which I thought was kind of cool how they're, like, tying everything in. Well, Wally gets, like, sucked back into the Speed Force into this,
mm-hmm.
while trying to fight Zoom. And Wally has this weird power now, because, like, when he touches someone, they remember their past lives.
Right.
Which I think is kind of cool, too. Like, just remember, like, when New 52 came, what did DC say the whole time?
I forget which one.
There's no going back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is it. This is the world now. Get used to it.
And, like,
I'm sure that wasn't the words, but that was the sentiment.
Yeah, it was basically, you know, like, we can never come back to this point again.
Charlie, you can never go back.
Well, I just think it's cool that, like, Wally has that. He can basically touch anybody in this whole world, except for Superman, because Superman knows.
Right.
Because he was caught in the convergence wave with Lois.
Yes.
Which is really weird, because they had to deal away with that Lois and that other Superman, because that other Superman died and he just replaced him.
Right. Yeah, but then there was the whole Mrs. Pitalik series, and that was weird, where apparently the essence of that new 52 Superman was merged with this one, so now he's both of them.
But still.
I just,
like I said, I always like the fact that, like, now we live in a universe where Superman is older than Clark is.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the other way it was in the old universe.
Yeah, the Sage Force and the Strength Force. I searched that whole issue looking for those.
But it's kind of cool, too, because Kid Flash, Iris, and Captain Cold, like, get trapped in, like, their version of the 25th century.
Right.
But, like, the time, like, breaks after Zoom breaks the strength barrier,
mm-hmm.
the time force barrier, whatever. Well,
there's a lot of pseudo-intellectual terminology thrown around this, so we can't remember all of it now.
Now, like I said, this book I love, because, like, just like the things that they added to the mythology, like, now they can't travel through time.
Right.
Like, at all. And I thought that was kind of funny, like, not even with, like, the cosmic treadmill, which I thought was kind of cool. Captain Cold seems to be ticked off that he's stuck in Commander Cold.
Right.
He's Commander Cold.
Yeah, because he's from the 25th century, so he's a reverse rogue. He's actually a good guy. Yeah.
So he's, like, trapped back in there, sort of, and it seemed like he got kind of mad. So I was like, wonder if Commander Cold's going to be, like, a bad guy. That'd be a little weird.
Yeah.
So at the end of this, someone gets freed from the Speed Force.
Yes, someone comes running out.
And it's Impulse.
It's Bart Allen.
And he's like, yeah, Barry, Wally, you did it. I'm free from the Speed Force. And I was like, dang it, are they going to keep doing this with, like, this book? Because, like, we got Jay back for, like, a minute.
Yeah.
And then Wally comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And now Bart. And I'm like, what are they going to do with Bart? Because Wally was around for a while before he got put in the Titans.
Right.
And the other book. So I'm like, When's Bart going to start showing up? I want to read Bart's book now.
Yeah.
Now that Impulse is back.
All right, so if you got Bart Allen back, it's kind of weird, though, because Bart looks young here. He looks like he looks, Young Justice. Yeah. All right, but you've got Tim, who was the Robin with Bart Allen in Young Justice, but he's much older now.
Well, it's not the same Tim, though, with Flashpoint.
Isn't it?
No.
Okay.
I mean, theoretically, it's not the same Bruce. It's the Flashpoint derivative of Bruce and Tim and every other character.
Okay. Because my understanding was basically the universe we're in now is the pre-Flashpoint universe.
But it's not.
But the timeline is just screwed up.
It's not. You know it's not. I mean, people with different power sets and everything like right. that. But it's not. But I will say, I don't know. It could just be a weird picture of Bart.
It may have been intentionally drawn nostalgically like he was when he first appeared or something. Yeah.
But I was just like, is he going to be in the...
Is he going to be in the book going forward?
Is he going to be in Titans? What? Like, because he just runs out of nowhere. And like, how would he know to find Bart or Wally?
So the thing I'm waiting for, eventually... I don't know how long it'll take. But the thing I'm waiting for is eventually we get Tim, Bart, and Connor all back together. The three. Yeah, and I would be like, oh my God, that would be amazing. As they were, you know, not all grown up evil Connor from the future or whatever.
I think Connor tried to come back.
Well, he came back in that when grown Tim came back in the Batman costume, then grown Connor came back looking for him. That's not the Connor I want. I want young Connor.
You're never going to have Young Justice again. That's never going to happen.
Well,
but what I want the JSA back.
Well, yeah, there you go.
I still think that there's no reason that they took them away other than like, we want to create a hip, new, young universe.
Well, Alan Scott's Lantern is showing up over on Doomsday Clock. All the ingredients to make this happen.
Is that in continuity? Because the only Alan Scott before that was the Alan Scott of Earth 2.
I assume it's an Alan Scott Lantern. I don't know which Alan Scott's Lantern
but
it
is.
But
that's what I'm saying. The Earth 2 Lantern was a younger guy.
Like, yeah, I don't have any reason to think it's his. Why would it be?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know exactly where Doomsday Clock fits in still.
So, but I'm saying is you're getting the pieces to the JSA back. Hawkman's back. You know, Power Girl's around somewhere. She's been back, you know, since early on. You know, Jay is in the Speed Force. We saw him for a minute. He'll be back at some point. They'll get him out.
I just want him back.
And, you know... So, and here we got, there was another one I was thinking of. Who was the other one?
Mr. Terrific. He's
in
another book.
So the old guys. There's Jay. There's Alan. There was somebody else I was thinking about. Maybe not. Maybe I've lost it. Sorry.
Well, there was Our Man. But that was the younger Our Man. Who is married to Liberty Bell.
Yeah.
Who, she shows up in this book.
Yeah, as if like a Force Ghost kind of thing.
In the hypertime sequence, you see Jesse in the background.
You also see Bart Allen's death scene from Crossing Infinite Earths in the background, too.
Berries.
Yeah, did I say berries?
You said Bart.
Whatever, somebody's. You knew what I meant.
But the weird thing is you see Bart, Wally's evil uncle, who's the reverse Flash of the 52, which is weird.
Yeah, but here you see like the whole Flash family running with him in this scene. And they almost look like Force Ghosts. There's Max Mercury. There's Jay. There's a girl, I guess, is Jesse Quick. And then it looks like Kid Flash, but that doesn't really make any sense. I don't know who that kid is. So, it's like the whole Flash family came out of Wally, really.
No, that's his kids.
Oh, those his kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he says, when I run, my family runs with me.
Right.
So it's his kids.
You know what was really cool about this? Was the fact that the Flash costume that Zoom puts on is Barry Allen's original Flash costume. Not this stupid new 52 one he's got that's all shiny and got streaky lines on it.
The Jim Lee lines.
This Jim Lee redesigned
the
one.
Lee lines.
And so I was thinking, sitting here thinking, even the red of his costume pops better than this one. And I was just like thinking, you know, that costume is such a much better costume. The boots are better. Everything's better about it. I would read this Zoom comic if he had his own comic if he wore that Flash costume.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like the new 52, I'm sorry, was a stunt.
Yeah, oh, it was one of the biggest failures ever.
Well, not really, because they...
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. They sold issues.
They still sell trades.
Yeah, so it was a commercial success.
Yeah.
But it was an artistic failure, in my point, because it was a really bad story. And now they're still correcting and riding the ship after that.
And they're just like, when the new 52 was like, let's 90s this up.
Yes.
Like, let's make storylines that like, oh, we said this stuff happens, but it happens in a hip, cool, new way.
Let me ask you this. Do you think they wrote the new 52 and then said, while we're at it, let's wrap the Wildstorm universe into it? Or was it the other way around? They said, we need to bring the Wildstorm universe into the DCU. Oh, wait, here's a story that'll make that happen.
Well, I think it was because of Jim Lee.
Right, because Jim Lee had just been named co-publisher.
Yeah.
And I think a whole lot of the reason that Flashpoint happened and we got the new 52 after that was that he wanted to bring his Wildstorm characters into...
Or he probably wanted more money and...
Yeah.
To get more recognition.
So I think that
had...
I don't know.
I'm not saying.
I'm guessing. I don't know this.
I'm not saying that Jim Lee is a bad person.
No, I'm not suggesting that either.
I'm not saying, like, I've said it before, he's a slow artist, okay? That's true. He is.
Well, yeah. But I like his lines. He's
I mean,
he's got some talent.
When he works at it, he produces some amazing stuff.
Yes.
But I don't think he's a strong storyteller.
No, I don't either.
And that's why books like the ones he co-wrote, like The Immortal Man, like that first issue was very Wildstorm-esque,
right.
90s image book.
Right.
I mean, it's gotten better since, but like I said, it started out like it was, oh, it's a secret team that no one knows about, and then we got to get this one kid who's secretly the strongest person in the world and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Or whatever. I'm just saying it was very much like that. And it's gotten better. But still, I think it was because of Jim Lee.
Yeah.
Anyway, to end this book, we go back to the 25th century to where the renegades are, or the good guy rogues, as John had mentioned earlier. And it's funny because there's a mirror monitor, I think his name is.
Yeah, they're all clever.
Golden Glider.
They're all clever takes on the current rogues, yeah.
But someone's broken out of this prison. And
they said this is the one prisoner that Eobard Thawn locked up.
Yeah. And they're like, and you're like, well, God, who do you lock up?
He's like the only person in here now.
Well, the funny thing is, it's like his cell door has an image on it, and you hear like this thing and says, finally, the Flashes will pay for what they've done to me. And as it breaks open, you see it, and like the cell says inmate crisis. And you're like, I don't know what that means, because there's a lot of imagery going on.
Right.
Like,
they're alluding to things, but they're not being clear about it.
There's like an hourglass, what looks like to be suns or...
Yeah, there's this weird like shape eclipses on the door, and you can't really make it out. It's like, okay, it kind of looks like an eye with two circles in front of each other. The circles, you could say, were the letter C. So there's an I and a C, which would be Infinite Crisis. Or you could say that the circles look like moons and Earths superimposed in front of each other, which gave Charlie an idea earlier about it might have something to do with Eclipso, because Eclipso's got that half moon thing on his face.
But you do see the shadow of the guy, and he looks like a bigger guy. So yeah,
I was thinking Doomsday when I first saw it, but it's not. Clearly, it's wrong character and wrong story.
Well, the shape of him kind of reminds me of Darkseid too, with the glowing red eyes and everything.
Yeah.
But I was like, who would Eobard Thawne throw in prison? That was
such a danger.
Yeah.
It has to do specifically with the Flash.
And then I was thinking it might be Cobalt Blue, which is a character John's not aware of, but it was Eobard Thawne's brother. They'd been separated,
mm-hmm.
and he had gotten his power from a blue gem. But the guy at the end says, worlds will live, worlds will die, and the multiverse will never be the same again. So I was like, ooh. And it's funny because it's all bathed in red,
right.
Like these two last two scenes are. I was like, ooh.
Because,
like, if you're a DC fan, like, these are, like, striking points that,
right.
Like,
that you can't miss.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's leaning very heavily on the Infinite Crisis. No, Crisis on Infinite Earths.
I mean, it could be, like, the Black Racer. Why would he be evil now? Because, I mean, there's a lot of questions, and hopefully they'll get answered. Like, maybe not soon, but maybe they're gearing up for, like, a Flash crossover for DC, which I think would be great.
Yeah.
They've never done that. Well, except for Flashpoint.
Flashpoint, yeah. That one big one.
This one's going to be called Flashpoint 2.
Flashpointer.
Flashpoint in a building. Now, what I wanted to ask was, you've been reading this, and you said you had a problem with Wally, but I've heard some people say that, like, the series kind of drags when there's no Wally in it.
Yeah.
You've read about 5 issues or so.
Well, and I also read some of the early stuff before, when it first hit, after Rebirth.
Yeah.
So I read about 10 or 15 issues of that.
So, and someone said, well, I don't think it's the same writing team.
That arc with Godspeed in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they said that the guy who writes this, Joshua Williamson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he must have a love for Wally, because he makes it
the books
a lot better when Wally's in it.
Right.
So, what do you think?
Well, I like it.
Oh, and by the way, Howard Porter's drawing this.
Yes.
And that's Howard Porter from Grant Morrison JLA that we'd mentioned earlier.
Yes.
But, as you were saying,
I liked it, and I like Wally in it, because, like, Wally's my Flash, right? And but I said it earlier, it felt like Wally was a little bit out of character, but maybe, you know, your explanation you gave explains that. If they're going to bring Wally to a place where he gets over this and he's well-rounded and he reminds me of the Wally I used to know, then I'm crazy about it. If Wally stays Swiss cheese brain from now on and can't remember things and acts irrational, then I wouldn't like it.
Well, the funny thing is, it's like, I was like, why would you people be complaining that he's making Wally?
Well, who's complaining?
Well, some people I saw online.
Well, I guess they're probably Barry Allen purists, and they don't want to share the spotlight with Wally.
I was like, he's like, yeah, the book's been really drag ever since Manipul's run on Flash.
Yeah.
After Johns had left.
Right.
And Manipul was writing and doing the art. And
right.
And I was like, I don't know, because Barry's been bad ever since.
And Barry's been making a lot of mistakes, too. I mean, Barry, everything that I was reading after Rebirth, Barry was not doing a very good job as the Flash.
I mean, this was the DC Universe's beacon of light, you know,
right.
Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I never got that from Barry at all. I was like, this is the guy that everyone talked about and everything.
Yeah, no, it's clear that Geoff Johns is in love with Barry Allen.
Yeah.
And so he wanted Barry Allen to be a showcase character and be front and center and a centerpiece in what was going on in the greater DC universe. And he got his wish, because it's Geoff Johns and he got a lot of pull. Geoff Johns also loves Hal Jordan. So that's, you know, you got both these characters back from the dead. Geoff Johns made that happen.
Yeah.
And so I was fine with Wally and
Bart.
No. The way New Green Lantern after.
Oh, Kyle.
Kyle Rayner. Sorry, brain fart. I was happy with those characters. Loved those characters. Those are my JLA, Flash, and Green Lantern. And I didn't need, you know, Johns to bring anybody back. But Johns said, no, if it's not classic. You know, at some point, comic books always return to whatever the default reset is. And just like, as much as I hated the Superman costume changes they had made recently, I knew it eventually they were going back.
Yeah.
And they have, except for the stupid cuffs. And they're going away at some point. At some
point, it could be just like Wolverine's claws, you know.
Right.
Like where they, like Jim Lee drew them as like big long daggers.
Right.
And like they were just, they used to be just like.
Just rounded
blades. Rounded little like claw things.
Yeah. Or how he used to have the little humpy metal things on his hand that they shot out of.
Yeah.
And then suddenly everybody decides that they got to come out of his knuckles.
Right.
They still do that. I think eventually... But
like I said, it was just because Jim Lee just like decided that like they were going to be long blades now.
Yeah. But it doesn't make any sense. Where's all that blade go when he retracts it?
But that's what I'm saying. It was just an artist change, and that'll probably be what happens to Superman. Or
Those stupid cuffs. Somebody's just going to forget to draw them.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to say anything, and it'll be it, and they'll be gone.
I mean, because like people were like kind of happy when like Deadpool, like the first Deadpool movie, because of a costume change.
Right.
And it was because he had his little flip in the back of his head.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a hood and it's a little flap part in the back,
It was just like a bump right there.
Right.
Because.
Kind of similarly to the way Skeletor's got a little flap where his hood sticks over.
Yeah. But that was just a Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness thing. Ed McGuinness just drew it that way.
Right.
So now it's like you see Deadpool and he doesn't have that and you're like, what's going on with this?
Yeah.
You know? It's just like I said, it's an art change. It'll probably.
There are very few art changes like that that they stick with.
I still like. It still confounds me why the Lee lines are still here. I mean, almost every especially in Flash's costume,
right?
Because he's about the only one who hasn't had a real costume change,
right?
Since New 52.
Yeah. So all of Jim Lee's high collars and all that stuff, they've gone from almost everybody's costumes.
Yeah.
Except the Flash.
Yeah.
The Flash still looks the same.
And I just find that terrible because it always looks like it's like made from like jagged little pieces.
And yeah. It looks like metal. It does. It almost looks like armor or something. Speaking of costumes, I hate Wally's costume. It's an off shade of red that I don't like, and the blue lightning bolt on it just does not look
good. Silver, but it's supposed to be. A reminiscent of his kid Flash costume.
Well, I realize with the headpiece and stuff the way it is, but still, I don't like the coloring on it. The coloring is not right. And I don't know if they thought it would be confusing to have two Flashes run around in the same costume, but, you know, that ought to be the costume that he came out of the Speed Force in. It ought to be.
It kind of was, because, like, when the... back in the day, when, like, it was, like, always kind of hard to tell... Barry's from Wally's costume.
Oh, you just have to look at the belt. You had to look at the belt. Because
Wally's belt didn't touch where Barry's did.
Yeah, because Wally's belt come down kind of in a little V shape with the two points pointing together but not touching.
Uh-huh.
And Barry's is just a circle. It went all the way around him.
Jagged
circle, lightning circle, but it went all the way around him in one piece. So it was easy for me to see who it was. You know, but
well, that's what I'm saying. If you're paying attention.
Yeah.
But who knows?
So.
But this was awesome.
It was. It was good.
You should read it. You should buy it.
So, but it was high action.
Art. A lot of running.
Yes. And Howard Porter was amazing on it.
He's great.
So, speaking of artists and art changes, Amazing Spider-Man's got a new artist.
Okay.
It's Ryan Otley. Yeah. So the guy that had been drawing Invincible for years is now suddenly over on Amazing Spider-Man with Charlie's favorite writer.
For like 130 some issues.
Right. No. But the artist, not the writer.
Yeah, Ryan Otley.
Yeah, but with Charlie's favorite writer, Nick Spencer. And the Cho's like, no, I'm not reading anything Nick Spencer writes. Okay, fine. All in all, this wasn't a great but not a bad story. It basically says, all right, we're not Dan Slott's run. Everything that...
I mean, the end of Dan Slott's run basically said, this is not Dan Slott's run.
Right. And so...
he was really phoning in for a lot of those issues.
Everything that Dan Slott did, we're going to tear down. So, the idea that Peter is now a wealthy industrialist that owns his own company, that's gone.
And I have a big problem with that.
Why?
Okay, this is the most unbelievable part about this book, right?
Uh-huh.
Every other CEO in our world, what happens to them? Their company goes bankrupt.
Oh, they get a golden parachute.
Yeah.
They can make millions of dollars on
You're
their way.
You're saying Doc Ock wouldn't have put this in place when he started Parker Industries?
Oh, really? I'm sure he would have. Yes, absolutely.
So Peter's now broke.
Sure.
Again.
Renting and We're living with a roommate to make ends meet.
Again.
Yes. The man makes... he never has any traction in his life. No matter how far he goes, he always resets, which is what we were just talking about. The character always resets to working at the freaking Beagle.
Bugle.
Excuse me. The Daily Beagle. I don't know. That's a different publication. The Daily Bugle.
But that's the thing. It's like, I can see it in other places, but not Spider-Man. I'm kind of tired of him being perpetually...
broke and...
yeah, like, oh, so you can't tell a good Spider-Man story if he has no problems.
Right. Which is why he can't be married.
Yeah,
he can't, you know.
He can't have kids. Which, I'm reading Amazing Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows. That book's great.
Is it?
It's good.
I've seen the artwork on it, you know, from covers and stuff. I go, it looks interesting.
It's fun. But the funny thing is about that book, they started out, it was going to be a Peter Parker and his, like, 8-year-old child, right?
Right.
Well, now it's like they did a storyline where they zapped 8 years in the future. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like they're going to go back to that point again.
Oh, okay.
But so it was just a story arc thing.
Right.
Which I think is funny.
So this book, everything that we knew is now over. So...
well,
the fact that he was estranged from Mary Jane also is now over, because they're going, by the end of the episode, by the end of the issue, they're back together.
They were kind of dating at the end of the last few
issues. Well, I didn't read that, so I'll take your word for it. But that was the whole, you know, but Dan Slott's run started with Brand New Day. And
that was because
they had to get
Quesada.
Rid of the, yeah, Quesada had to get rid of the marriage, because Spider-Man doesn't work married. So we're going to bring in Mephisto and magic, and you don't have to explain it.
And with that dangling plot line, nothing ever happened to that.
No. Never was any comeuppance for that. Never was any undoing. Never was any figuring out Mephisto had messed with him. Never. They never resolved that. I always assumed they would. I always assumed they left
it. I thought it had been a great crossover if, like, there was, like, a crossover, the Save Spider-Man's Soul or whatever.
Yeah.
And nothing ever came of it.
Yeah. Well, and generally, Mephisto would have required more of a price other than just breaking up the marriage.
Well,
that wouldn't have been enough to suit him. He would have.
I think that, if I remember correctly, he said the product of your marriage would have presented something greater than the both of you, and that would have been a detriment to me. So, in other words, if he had a kid.
Eh, maybe. So anyway, Spider-Man's, they show him fighting with the Avengers, and, like, nobody in the Avengers likes him, you know, because he's trying to tell jokes, and they're all, like, mad at him for something he did. I don't recall what it was, but he goes, hey, it's your friend in the neighborhood, Spider-Man, I've come to help out, and they all look around and go, oh, it's you. It's kind of weird, because as they showcase the different versions of these movie characters that are fighting with these Avengers, it's the...
movie characters.
The movie characters and the cinematic Netflix characters. Like, cause
really?
Because except for the Iron Fist costume, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage are like they are in the Netflix series.
Oh, I thought you meant like Daredevil would show up and he'd be...
well, there's Daredevil, but he doesn't look like Daredevil. But, I mean, from the Netflix series, but they look distinctly like the ones from the Netflix series. Also, here's the Guardians of the Galaxy. They're showcased. It's all heavily...
So this is a... let's see how many people Ryan Otley can draw from this universe.
Yeah, really. So apparently Wilson Fisk is the new mayor of New York City.
Yeah.
And apparently he's like, he stages his whole bank robbery thing for Spider-Man to stop. Spider-Man comes in and stops him, and Wilson Fisk says, "Congratulations, Spider-Man, you're victorious again. Here's the key to the city." And Spider-Man's like, "I'm not falling for this. I'm out of here." And one of Kingpin's thugs or whatever, henchman, says, "Why are you doing this, sir? He's your enemy." And he goes, "Killing them with kindness. Killing them with kindness." And I was like, that's really kind of stupid.
That's not anything Kingpin would ever say.
Yeah, well, I mean, his, you know, he's got a plan. I think his plan is to paint Spider-Man in a particular light and then jerk the rug out from under him. He says, "I could attack and hunt and hound the wall crawler, but to truly hurt him, it is much better to isolate him, create a schism between him and those he admires."
Murder.
Between those he admires and crash.
Schism? Murder.
Wow, it took me a second.
He said, "That's some flop."
"And once I have him alone and cornered, then can I squash him like a bug." So what he's trying to make the other heroes in New York City not like Spider-Man by treating them like they're all bad guys. Because he's got a piece passed a law or something saying that vigilantism is outlawed and stuff like that. But Spider-Man is New York's hero. And so that's the reason that...
Brooklyn-born Spider-Man.
And so that's the reason that they all don't like him. So here's the kind of the thing that...
Are you that spider guy? Spider-Man.
So here's kind of the thing that the
I
whole...
I love that movie. I hate to say it, but a lot of people don't. I love that movie.
Here's the issue that... the whole thing turns on is that the university that Peter Parker went to get his master's or to get his doctorate while Doc Ock was Spider-Man in Superior Spider-Man, yeah, has now got new technology based off Cerebro Tech. And this new technology helps...
Where did you get that from?
I don't know. They're talking about it. They've got it, right? This new technology helps detect...
Now that Xavier's dead, we can sell his whole hereditary line.
This new technology helps the school fight plagiarism. Because, like, with advanced technology stuff, said people like Amanda Clarksdale, who used a tri-dimensional doorway to find an alternate version of herself that happened to be a genius, or Michael Prescott, who buried a hidden cell of scroll refugees to help him falsify control results in a paper that was published in 3 academic journals, or perhaps the saddest story of all, the late Ricky London, who sold his soul to the Dark Lord Mephisto in exchange for a passing LSAT score. So apparently, because we live in a fantastic universe where anything's possible, kids are finding new and innovative ways to cheat at college. So this particular technology they have can scan your work and detect whether or not it's fraudulent, whether it's plagiarized, whether or not you actually produced it, or whether an alternate version of yourself or a shapeshifter or somebody else produced it, right? And so Peter Parker's there covering it for the Daily Bugle because he's a science editor.
Yeah.
And he's there, and she goes, "We just happen to have one of our recent doctoral graduates in the audience. Let's bring Mr. Parker up here." So Mr. Parker comes up and says, "What can I do for you?" "We happen to have one of your papers here that you wrote for your graduate thesis. We're going to use this technology to verify its authenticity." And he goes, wait, stop. No, let me explain something. And she puts it in and it comes up fraudulent. Written by Dr. Otto Octavius. He's the laughingstock. He gets drummed out of the school and gets his degree stripped from him. So now everything that Peter Parker gained through all of Dan Slott's run has been taken away from him.
In one issue, I can magically disappear everything.
He gets fired from the Bugle because Robbie Robinson can't have a plagiarist working for the Bugle.
Oh, good Lord, no.
And so he's unemployed, and the only way he can find any solace is in the arms of... Oh, even Aunt May, who reads about it online, is mad at him.
Oh my God, you were the man I married for like 6 months?
And so... the only solace he can find to make himself feel better about the whole thing is in the arms of Mary Jane, and who basically says that we're together and we always will be. And at the end of the book, the school decides to take him in and give him one more chance to get his graduate because somebody vouched for him, and this new teacher decided that they were going to teach him, and the new teacher is
the Lizard.
The Lizard. who says, "Mr. Parker, have a seat."
I don't know.
So, it's just weird. It's like, all right, we've gone out of our way to not be Dan Slott's run of Spider-Man, to reset everything back to the way you read Spider-Man when you were a kid, and to try and build on that, but without denying that those things happened, but they don't count anymore, and they're not important anymore. And so I was just like, but now you've got like a Peter Parker that's got to be 26, 27, 28 years old at least, running around like he did when he was 16. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. It feels a little disingenuous from that point of view. Peter Parker should be his own man. He should be, you know, independent. He should be strong.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't really like veer from like what's happened before.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, hey, this is a brand new direction in Peter's life. No, this is a brand new retelling of Peter's high school and college years over again.
Right.
And I mean, like, how many times are you going to do that?
You know, one, I will give credit. You know, I'm a Superman fan. I will say this, because we recently went through the Dark Knight non-wedding, right?
Yeah, the non-wedding.
And Superman's a character who, by and large, for the most part, has always progressed. They haven't done a lot of this stupid reset with Superman. Superman has never had his marriage erased. Superman's never went through any period that I can think of in recent memory where suddenly they, after Crisis, after the original 86 Crisis, never went through any period where suddenly they said, oh, well, everything you knew didn't count, except for New 52, which they undid, because they brought him back. And so, so Superman is a character that continues to move forward. You know, he changes his costume and changes it back and stuff. But
that's kind of why I'm having the big problem with Bendis writing this new series.
Right. Why?
Because it almost seems like he did go backwards.
Well, in what way?
I mean, theoretically, the marriage.
Well, the marriage is still there. She's gone.
She's just gone.
Right.
And before how long were she just...
Yeah, but they're not...
They weren't married.
No, I don't think they're going that way. I think they're setting up a story where Superman will be tested. His loyalty to his wife will be tested.
Here's the thing, right?
Yeah.
What happened in the 80s with a lot of these characters? They got married, didn't they?
Yeah, some of them, sure.
Iris and Barry.
Mm-hmm. Hal and Carol never got married.
Well, no, but that's because she's sometimes in a crazy psycho.
Starts that fire.
And he likes sleeping with 13-year-old alien girls.
Yeah, sure.
But Clark got married.
So, mm-hmm.
And none of that changed for like...
Peter got married. When did Peter get married?
Early 90s.
Yeah, I was going to say 89, 90, 91, something like that.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. So like, they were married for 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there was none of this, well, let's get rid of the marriage because the marriage doesn't work. Is it just your poor storytelling that you can't make the marriage work? You don't know how a marriage works?
Yeah, that I think that's got a lot to do with it. I agree with you.
Because I was reading...
But there have been other resets. They're not just marriage resets.
I was reading something else. I can't remember what it was. Oh, yeah, the Spider-Man book. The Renew Your Vows.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like... That's Spider-Man with a kid. It's great.
And it works. Sure.
I mean, you know, you can have adventures with him, with his kid, or whatever. And it's like, that's Peter Tomasi. Like, Bendis doesn't have kids that I'm aware of. He may.
I don't know if he does or not. I don't think he's married, is he?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But see, that's what I'm saying, is it...
So you're saying he can't write a married couple because he doesn't know firsthand what that's like?
I mean, what do you do with Jessica and
Luke?
Luke.
Did they not stay together?
I mean, they stayed together, but they were barely ever in the books.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just like...
So, he writing a strong marriage is not one of his...
It doesn't seem like
go-to
it.
Story elements. It could be, but like I said, we've had a lot of character resets over the years. We've had, you know, Hal and Barry both back from the dead. Things like that. Things that were a certain way for a while and then suddenly they undid them. You know, whether it's Bucky coming back from the dead or whatever, you know.
Like I said, Linda and Wally had kids.
Right.
It's reset it all.
Yeah, that's the thing about comic books, is if you're a comic book fan, you know that at some point...
So then you just gotta, like, start picking your line.
Right. This I'm gonna read this right now, and I like this right now, and at some point it'll be reset, and then I may be off
the Like, paper. Someone said, can you name, a like, on one of the Facebook forums, like, can you name a book you've been reading continuously?
Forever. For as long as you've been reading.
Since you started reading. I said, no.
Yeah.
For different reasons, art.
Well, I
mostly
can...
Mostly writing.
Some of that, for me, has been the fact that I either was or wasn't reading any comics. So I have taken breaks from comics. But I will say, as long as I have been reading comics regularly, I've been reading all the Superman books. And you've been reading Batman books all the way through. Were you ever in a period where you weren't reading any Batman books?
I'm not reading any now.
You're not? No, I thought you were reading Detective.
Nope.
Okay, well, you're a better man than I am, Charlie Brown.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like I can't do that. I can't say I've bought a book continuously ever since I've been reading books, because art change, writer change.
Oh, now did you ever let me ask you this, did you ever suffer through a book that wasn't any good just because you liked the book, hoping it would get better?
I probably stayed, well, prime example, Morning Glories, the Nick Spencer book that he did for Image Book. I stayed with that way too long.
Yeah, but didn't it seem like you read a bunch of X-Men there through the 90s that wasn't very good, but you were big into X-Men, so you were... Seems like I remember you saying that. Maybe I'm thinking about somebody else.
No, I had Uncanny X-Men from like 130 to like issue 400. But then like they changed the artist and I was just like, I can't read it if I can't tell who the characters are. So I stopped reading that. And I didn't go back for a long time.
Yeah.
I stopped reading Batman continuously. About 8 years ago? Nine? I mean, when Scott Snyder wrote it, I read that because that was good.
Right.
But beforehand, I hadn't been reading it for years because they had Tony Daniel writing it. And Tony Daniel, in my opinion, is a better artist than he is a writer.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And they had Brian Hitch doing a Batman book, writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, once again, better artist, not a great artist, mind you, but a better artist than a writer.
You know, whether you like Bendis or not, you can say that to some degree, Superman, you know, they have taken that character and they've brought in an all-star creator to put on the book. And I think with their flagship characters, they ought to try to do that. You know, and so...
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying that, like...
But I wish that we had something like that going on with Batman now to make you happy.
I mean, I think I would have rather have seen Jason Aaron's take on Spider-Man.
Yeah, that would have been good. But Jason Aaron's busy.
Not Nick Spencer's.
Yeah.
I mean, like... But other than that, I'm really not reading... Hell, give back to Peter David.
It's for real.
I mean, I'm starting to read Ben Reilly's Scarlet Spider.
Is Peter David writing that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's writing that book. So I'll read that. I'm not going to be reading Nick Spencer, Amazing Spider-Man, or Chip Zdarsky's Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man. And Miles Morales isn't a book anymore. Which is funny, because they just announced they're doing a new ongoing book with Spider-Gwen, who's now going to be called Ghost Spider.
Yeah.
Which is a horrible name.
Horrible name. Spider-Gwen
is bad, but...
Yeah.
And then they're either doing a mini-series or it's an ongoing series of Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, the Superior Dr. Octopus.
Superior Dr. Octopus.
Superior Octopus or something like that.
And I was like, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm steering away from a lot of Marvel books.
I am excited about this Fantastic Four reboot coming out.
I'm not.
I miss the Fantastic Four. I'd like to see what they're going to do with them. I'll give them an issue or two and see what's going on. All right, so that begs the question, and I know that we're supposed to be reviewing books, and we got a couple more to talk about, but I feel like doing this. So who are the writers today that you are really excited about? I still like
Jeff Lemire's good.
Yeah. What's he writing stuff? I forget off the top of my head. I know I was reading something from his the other day. Shoot.
He's reading Sentry.
Yeah, that's what it was. He writes
a book for Image called Royal City. He's writing a book from Dynamite.
Is Grant Morrison writing anything right now?
No.
See, that's sad.
From what I understand, he's going to start writing Green Lantern.
Okay, that might be interesting.
Might be.
You never know.
With Grant Morrison. It's not going to be... It's either going to be Joe the Barbarian or it's going to be Final Crisis.
Yeah, Joe the Barbarian was great.
Whereas Final Crisis was crap.
Yeah, it was crap. Yeah.
I like, not Brian Wood, but...
Brian K. Vaughan.
Brian K. Vaughan.
He's always great.
But I'm not reading all his books, though.
Yeah.
Because he's writing about 5 Image books, and I'm only buying, like, one.
Well, you read Saga, don't you?
Yeah.
And Paper Girls?
Yeah.
So that's 2.
That's 2.
Yeah.
But I'm not reading the other ones he's doing. Yeah.
You're not a big Kirkman fan?
No.
Nah, I know that. I'm just kidding.
But really, those...
Jason Aaron...
I like some of... I've heard it said that Jason Aaron does the same story on whatever other book he's on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he did Thor, and Thor dealt with a character that killed gods.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went to Doctor Strange, where... they made a gang who killed magic.
So if he wrote a dinosaur book, it would be about the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs?
Well, no. I mean, I'm surprised he's kind of doing that with Avengers now.
Yeah, kind of. It depends. If they actually kill the Avengers, you'll be right.
But no, what I'm saying is it's one of those things where they're supposed to do that thing.
This big existential threat that destroys everything.
Whatever that they are doing.
Whatever they're about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what he's doing with Avengers.
So if he was riding the Flash, it'd be something that destroyed the Speed Force.
Yes.
Yeah.
But technically, he are.
Yeah, but that's already going on over here. We've already got that.
Like I said, other than those two or three, well, Scott Snyder, I'm reading JLA.
Right. So it doesn't seem to me like, based on what me and you were just kicking back and forth, that there's a ton of great writing going on in the land of DC and Marvel, which is where we spend most of our time. We dabble in a few, and you know, Image books and things like that. Seems like we're more attracted to the artwork right now than anything else.
I don't know.
It's just an interesting look at it. All right, let's finish up. We got a couple more to talk about. X-Men Grand Design number 1.
Not a lot to say about this book. This book came out 3 or 4 months ago. It's already in trade because all it was 2-issue miniseries. And, like, it's kind of funny because they traded it in this book that's, like, this big. It's
right.
Hilarious. It's like, theoretically, you could not put it on the
show. Yeah.
I mean, it's, like, way huge.
I can't remember Cowboy Ninja Viking, whatever it was. That was huge.
It wasn't magazine size, so it never fit in like one of those magazine boxes size bags. It was too tall or whatever.
Yeah.
Or too long. But this is a book by Ed Piskor. And I don't know much about Ed Piskor. But
did you say piss poor?
Piskor.
Okay.
I don't know how to say his last name. It's Piskor.
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 Piskor, Piskor. Piskor.
But what this is it's the
X-Men. I thought you said piss poor though. Anyway.
It's the X-Men history, but like done from like someone who did like 90s alternative comic books.
Okay.
Like the guy who drew Scud the disposable assassin.
It seemed like I was thinking Mike Allred when you said that.
But it's kind of funny because it's also one of these books that's like done on newsprint,
mm-hmm.
just like Flash 50, which I didn't mention,
but they did that and it was really cool.
But it's like it's kind of cool because like you see like it goes through the history of like it starts out with like the Watcher on the Moon and he's talking to a recorder,
mm-hmm.
which is funny because this recorder looks like Iron Man with a cassette, a reel to reel on his chest.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of like Soundwave.
Well, like say,
but the reels are on the outside as opposed to inside.
But he starts telling, he's like, well, I have to write a report on the most interesting creatures I've ever known, so I'll decide to write about mutants. And it starts out, and he starts talking about what are they called?
The invaders. The invaders.
Yeah. The invaders, where it's like,
The Human Torch, Namor.
Aquaman and Namor.
Not Aquaman. Namor.
Namor and Captain America.
Captain America, right.
And it's like, well, you know, the funny thing is, it's like, you know, Namor destroyed New York City. Killed thousands of people for like weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes with this thing that Charles Xavier's parents helped build a defense system for the army to help fight Namor. And that's how they made their money.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned out that they didn't know about their child because they were working with like plutonium and stuff at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And their son Charles was born a mutant.
Right.
Which is kind of funny because like I said, they have like all the old Marvel like original characters like the Angels there. Whatever. Right. So like it shows Charles like. First time, like, it shows Captain America fighting in World War II, and there's a little mutant kid with white hair,
mm-hmm.
who, when Captain America throws his shield, like, automatically, like, knocks out, like, 50 Nazis. And so, do you know who the little white hair kid is?
Is it Magneto?
It's Magneto.
Yeah.
So, it's, like, his first power, Charles, like... His parents, his mom marrying Kane Marco's dad.
Is that Wolverine in the upper left-hand corner?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I said, this thing goes deep into history.
Right.
Like even retconned history. So that's where Wolverine came in.
Right, because he was around for World War II.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it goes through, like, well, shows Magneto, like, going through and helping Magda escape from their, concentration camp.
This is dense. There's a lot of small panels.
Yeah. It's great though. But because like there's these weird panels, like I said, like when they first start talking about mutants, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they show some of these mutants and like there's one dude who's just like blue.
Yeah.
And he's like a farmhand dude. So like I said, it's like one of those offbeat like 90s alternative comic books, but like with the history of the X-Men.
Right.
And it shows, like, Xavier's, like, when he first goes to Cairo and he meets Storm,
mm-hmm.
which was retconned in later on.
Right.
But he fights the Shadow Master, who is a Farouk something or other. Like I said, he fights him on the astral plane. Like I said, like, all these weird, like, panels where, like, Xavier's face contorts when he's using his powers and everything. Mm-hmm. And how he goes about and he's like saving people. He meets Moira McTaggart. Magneto kills some people, like kills like his whole village where he was from when they discover that he's a mutant. Because
mm-hmm.
they kill his wife and he thinks they killed his wife. And like Xavier figures out that like he wants to help mutant kind. So he gets Moira McTaggart, who he said they have a relationship with, and she helps him build Cerebro, and Magneto becomes a big power, and then he falls in love with, he helps this girl, Gabrielle Haller, who she's like mentally blocked, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he helps her, right? He gets rid of her mental blockage and she comes out of her, like, her coma or whatever. And they have a relationship later on. And it's funny because Charles breaks it off. He's like, you know, this is really weird because you were my patient or whatever. And she has Legion.
Okay.
David Haller. But like I said, this is like a really cool, like, history of like the X-Men mixed with the Marvel Universe,
right?
With retcon stuff done in a really alternative way. It's kind of funny though, because when the Watcher's talking to the recorder. He talks about like the Earth like thousands of years ago, like the Earth was passed by the Phoenix Force.
Right.
And apparently the Phoenix Force was looking for the perfect vessel. So this goes through like the introduction of like the X-Men team where they are fighting the original people, how Cyclops was recruited by a bad guy to help him like rob banks and stuff because he thought he was like helping mankind or whatever. He goes up to like the first time they meet the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And you know who takes the picture?
Mm-mm.
Let's see. Yeah. Reed right there in that park. Like.
Let's see. An adequate photo, Parker. Oh, Peter Parker?
Yeah, he's talking to Jameson. Jameson Parker, because Peter takes the first picture of the Brother of Evil Mutants.
An adequate photo, Parker. The headline will read, Brotherhood of Evil Mutants Strikes Again. Mr. Jameson, I'll need an advance on that. The helmet guy smashed my camera with his mind.
That's what I'm saying. It's got some like funny little like comedic lines in it too.
Yeah.
You know, along with the art, but it's funny because like at the end of the book, like he basically like thanks like every like writer and artist of the X-Men have ever had or whatever, and then like. He has this thing called additional reading where it's like two pages of like where the actual history is from and all the like the references.
Right.
And some of the books. So cool. Really good.
All right, Charlie.
And that's one of two that I haven't read two yet.
Okay.
Cool. And he's supposed to be doing another two issues soon.
Okay. Excellent. So is he just going to do X-Men stuff, or will the other one be like Avengers history or something? No, it's
still X-Men, I think.
Oh, okay.
Probably going to bring it up to present continuity. And then again, you know, if it becomes super popular, he'll be doing everything.
Yeah, the entire universe.
You know, Marvel.
Yes.
Well, oh, wait.
The history of the Defenders.
I forgot, like, the funny thing is, the Watcher talks about like humans recording things on television or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and the robot that's beside him, he's like, "What? Humans have recorders too?" Like I said, there were some really weird, quirky like bits of comedy in there. It was great though.
All right, Charlie, finish this up with Archie number 32.
Archie 32 is written by Mark Waid. Art is done by. Well, it's Mark Waid and Ian Flynn. Art is done by a guy named Audrey Mock, or a girl named Audrey Mock. And it might be surprising that I'm talking about an Archie book. But then again, you know, I have talked about Archie books before.
Right. You like the Archie.
But this is like...
Although, didn't you just recently say you were done with Archie or something?
Yes, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, okay.
I have talked about Archie before, but those were the horror books. The Afterlife with Archie, where Archie's a zombie. Well, the Riverdale gang are zombies, and I've talked about Sabrina, where she's like a real witch in the 60s or whatever.
And Jughead's a werewolf.
Yeah, Jughead's werewolf now, and there's a Vampironica book where Veronica is a vampire. I don't read that one. It just seems silly. Plus, I'm...
Anyway.
More into werewolves or whatever than I am vampires. But anyway, this is like about the teen Archie, not like the Riverdale, even though they have a Riverdale comic book based on the TV show,
right?
But this is like good old Archie and high school stuff. So it's kind of like fluff stuff, but like it's
some kind of popcorn fare that you're used to.
Yeah, but it's not kiddie. Because, like, a couple months ago, Archie and Reggie Mantle were having a race, and Reggie accidentally hits Betty, and she's been in a wheelchair for a long time.
Oh, yeah?
And, like, Reggie almost went to jail. And that's culminated in this whole storyline where the Blossom's father come back, their real father.
Mm-hmm.
Who their rich father that they know as their dad, mm-hmm, is not their real father. He's their stepdad. Well, he's telling, like, their real father comes back and is like, oh yeah, I love you kids or whatever. He's just in it to try to get money from them. And he takes, like, hostage of the prom. And that's where this book takes place, during the prom.
Okay.
And he's got a gun. And he's threatening to kill kids or whatever. And the Blossoms are trying to help him because they think their dad's being altruistic and be like, yeah, we're going to get all of our money and whatever. We'll be rich and we'll live with our dad who loves us or whatever. Like I said, he's just doing it for the money. He doesn't care about his family at all. It's kind of funny because, like, he literally explains that later in the book. And they're like, what? We thought you loved us and whatever. He's like, I don't love you kids. I've been in jail for, like, the last 10 years. I escaped or whatever. Your mom married some rich guy. I'm trying to get paid. Well, thing is, like, the Archie gang, like, Jughead, Betty, and Veronica, they're all trying to figure out how to stop this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they use Archie's run of good luck, what he calls good luck. Well, what they call good luck. Because Archie, in this book, is incredibly clumsy.
Okay.
To whereas he's set fire to the buildings, he's lost several jobs, he's done everything, but he always walks out fine.
Okay.
So they devise a plan to where, like, they figure out, like, if Archie does something, it'll screw up in the most magnificent way. We get the gun back from the Blossom's father. And that's actually what happens. That's what they do in the book. And at the end of the prom, Mr. Weatherby's talking to Archie, and he's like, well, you know, Archie goes, I heard that you were leaving. And he's like, well, I'm not going to leave until you're out of the school. He goes, because, you know, I want this place to, like, stay in one place. And he's like, oh, really? And I'm like, yeah. Well, I think that's where this issue ends. Like, the series ends.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, at the end of it, like, they don't say what's coming up next. But they have Mark Waid doing this book called Archie 1941. And I don't think I'm really interested in that.
Right.
But, Mr. Weatherby just goes off, like, at the end of the day, and, like, he turns the lights off and he says, good night, boys and girls. So I'm pretty sure this was the last
issue
of Mark Waid's run. And who's coming on to write it next?
Nick Spencer.
Ha!
So Charles like, I'm out.
I'm done. He won't be Morning Glories glorying this book. So yeah, I'm done with that. It was a good book. Read the 32 issues. They're funny, some of them. Sometimes serious, but not too serious.
Right.
Like I said, the car accident and the trial was about the worst things, but it's a decent book.
Sweet.
And it's probably the best thing that Mark Waid's writing right now.
All right. So that's our supposed to, we had one less issue than we normally do, yet we went long tonight. So
I told you we were going to.
Yeah. So let's stop here, take a quick break, come back, close the show out, and get out of here for the night. All New Reality, the comic book podcast. Sit tight.
No more Optimus Prime. Grant me mercy, I beg of you.
You, who are without mercy, now plead for it? I thought you were made of sterner stuff.
All New Reality, the comic book podcast. So we have a shortened show as far as issues, but a longer show as far as time. We hope you had a good time tonight listening to our reviews and our intricacy as we looked at Flash 50 and what it means and why that it could very well change the fabric of the whole DC universe with all these...
Oh.
With all these different forces being unleashed. Seriously, there's a lot of forces, right?
Yeah.
There's a Sage Force, the Steel Force, the Strength Force.
Strength Force.
And we haven't even... Some of them we don't...
Speed Force.
Speed Force. And some of them I don't think we know about yet.
I think it's funny, like, we didn't mention it in the show, but, like, they actually referred to the Flashpoint as a an era of time, too.
Oh, really?
In the book.
Okay.
Like, remember, like, when, during Green Lantern, when, like, they went to the Owens and they were all, like, 52, 52, 52, mm-hmm. and, like, they did the new 52. And
right.
They referred to Flashpoint as a era of time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you what, it's all gonna go back.
Yeah. Not soon enough. All right. So, we thank you for joining us on the show tonight. We want to hear from you. If you thought we droned on a little too long about the Speed Force and whatnot, then let us know. Send us an email at aldenrowdypodcast@gmail.com. Head over to the website to check out this episode as well as other amazing episodes that we're putting out each and every week. The website address is arnetcast.podomatic.com. Check us out on iTunes. Give us a review over there. We love that. It helps us gain exposure and more people find Alternate Reality. Write, give us a 5-star rating and write a, you know, just a sappy, drippy, loving review. We would appreciate that. That would be helpful. And catch us on the social media. Twitter is where we kind of hang out most of the time. Twitter.com/John Loveless for me. AR_podcast for the show. And XOnslaught for Charlie. A quick note, if you were following me at John Loveless, you may need to refollow me. I recently like wiped my account and restarted it from scratch. And as a result, everybody that was following me got booted. So if you're a fan of the show.
For a while, I couldn't follow you.
So
I saw where you like retweeted something. I just like clicked on your name today.
Okay. Well, I'm glad it finally worked out for you. But
I could not have followed you.
I kept checking. Is Charlie following me? No, he's not. Okay. Well, maybe he just hasn't seen it yet. So I kept but at some point I started to wonder, is he not going to follow me? But anyway, that's fine. But like I said, if you were following me,
I could have lived without you. That's good.
If you were following me and you care to continue to, then, and again, there's a good chance that I may have been following you. And I am not anymore because I wiped out both my followers and my followees. So we may be missing each other. So if you used to follow me and you're not suddenly, you check your people you're following and I'm not on there, follow me again because it's an open account. It's just new. So you have to re-find it and follow at John Loveless, J-O-N, no H in my name, Loveless, L-O-V-E-L-E-S-S. Follow that. And then when I see you, if I said, oh, I was following that guy, I'll follow you back. Or I may eventually get around to following you if I remember everybody that I was following and track them down. But I wanted to be aware that that had happened over the weekend. Something's funny. check us out also on the Facebook, facebook.com. There's an Alternate Reality page there, as well as me and Charlie have personal accounts there. You can search for us. It should be easy enough to find. And we will friend us and we'll friend you back, maybe. And we interact over there on that. Alternate Reality is a Comics Podcast Network supporter. We're a proud member. Alternate Reality has been a member of the Comics Podcast Network since its early days. You can catch out the networks over at that chair. Oh, my God, that
over
chair.
Over at that chair?
This chair of mine is not working right. I'm going to have to do something. Anyway, check out the podcast network over at Comics with an S, Podcast with an S, double plural. comicspodcast.com for this and other really cool shows that are part of the network. Anything to add to that, Charlie?
No.
All right, well, we've taken long enough. Let's get out of here. Only one show this week. We'll be back next week for more comics and fun. Until then, my name is John.
I'm Charlie.
And we're out. You guys have a good night. You got the touch. You got the power.
Till that day, till all are one.